You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Ladies and gentlemen, the show is about to start in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
He'll be fine on the mountain.
It's time for Inside the Gamecocks, the show built by the Barnuminium Company, served by Chicken Cock Whiskey, and part of the Chiefs Sports Network.
Touchdown, Carolina! Touchdown, Ace Sanders! Pressure! Penny just dives in!
All right, greetings and good Friday morning. Welcome aboard and welcome home. Inside the Gamecocks, the show live from the Signorama Studios. They are, of course, the preferred sign partner of your South Carolina Gamecocks. Signorama.com, locally owned, Gamecock owned and operated. Our friend Matt Vaughn, who will be in attendance, I'm sure, tonight to watch South Carolina play game one against the Kentucky Wildcats at Founders Park. Always served by Chicken Cock Bourbon and built by the Barndo Co., your dream home in four states, the Carolinas, Georgia, and in Tennessee, the BarnDominiumCo.com. Schubert, Mad Dog, and myself. No mustache anymore for Mad Dog. It's gone. He wiped it clean. Was that your decision or your wife's?
No, my wife said, you know what, maybe it's time to let it go. And yeah. And immediately I was like, thank you, let's go, and it's gone.
Well, hey, like, look, man.
Right, that was fun.
Yeah, okay. It was good while it lasted. It was good while it lasted, and we'll miss it. But the good news is if you want it again, you could probably, you know, just grow it back. That's kind of how it works.
Function of time. That's it. Yeah. You just got to put in a little time and effort.
Yeah, yeah. So – clean-shaven Mad Dog and JC with no visor, no hat, just rolling out of bed. And I've been up since 5. So there you go.
No,
I almost kept the soul patch. It was the last thing that I trimmed this morning. I was like, I'll just let it all go. Just let it all go.
Yeah, I've been up since 5, too. The youngest kid had a morning football workout. Shows you how soft they are up here. They only have that once a week at 5 a.m.
Okay.
I don't know how good that once a week does, but I have to take it because the wife sleeps in. We have a little deal. If we go out the night before, I get to sleep in. If not, I have to get up at all times. So I got up. I made a meme, a couple of memes. I've got this meme generator that's driving everybody crazy. Being creative. I did some research, though. About Xavier Leggett, of course, going in the first round last night. That's the seventh player in 7 years. I mean, seventh wide receiver from seven small towns in South Carolina the last 20 years to get drafted. Not a population over 24,000 in that group. Most of these places are like below 3. Your Mullins of the world and Jackson, South Carolina, where Troy Williamson's from, over in Aiken County, et cetera, et cetera. So that's I think it's a trend now, you know, these kids from these small towns and very few. Alshon was the highest rated one. And Yeah, I remember everybody was so very skeptical about him being an elite of the elite guy, which is what he was. But I like it. You could throw Clemson in there, too. I didn't know the town of Sockestee was as populated as it is now, so I don't know if I can include Hunter Renfro. But, you know, Mike Williams is not from a big place. DeAndre Hopkins is not from a big place either. Martavis Bryant ended up at T.L. Hanna and Anderson, but it's really from originally from Calhoun Falls. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of a fascinating look at that position as it relates to these small towns throughout South Carolina. Jerron Brown was from Sherrill. I forgot. Jerron Brown didn't do much at Clemson, but he was in the NFL for a while, so for a minute or two. So
Yeah. That was such a neat moment watching. Y'all saw the video, right, that was released by Carolina Football?
Yeah.
And we had the chance to spend a little bit of time around Xavier and got to understand quickly why he's such a likable guy. So I'm personally thrilled for him that his family doesn't have far to go to watch him play football. He's going to be in Charlotte. And he's just made the Panthers a much better organization in two ways, as a player, of course, but also as a person. And he'll be up there with like-minded folks because there's a lot of Gamecocks on that roster now. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney's there and J.C. Horn is there. I mean, this is really pretty neat. And you know, I'm
DJ Wanham.
DJ Wanham, yeah, yep. So, I mean, you're talking about guys who were not only outstanding football players at the University of South Carolina, but they're all really good dudes. And so for the Panthers organization, that's pretty neat for them. I would venture a guess it's probably going to draw some extra fans, maybe some people who, you know, never really cared too much because the Panthers are only a 30-year-old franchise at this point in time. And so maybe, I don't know, maybe that's part of the equation for them, trying to draw in a few extra folks to the fan base. I don't know, but I do know this. That was really neat to see him go. What a crazy, crazy first round with six quarterbacks going in the top 12. Clearly, Michael Penix was the story because nobody can figure out exactly, you know, what the point of that was. And you didn't get a defensive player to go until Latu from UCLA went 15 Colts, and then he was one of three consecutive. I think what they end up having, 9 defensive players, 9, and they had 23 offensive players in the first round. And how many wide receivers went?
I think it's because of
7 wide receivers?
7.
Six quarterbacks? Yeah, 7. So 7 wide receivers and 6 quarterbacks.
There's so many bad passing offenses in the NFL, though. I mean, and you look at the team that won it, they're pretty good at throwing the ball. So I think there's a little emulation going. But, yeah, it was shocking to me. Mm-hmm. It's like these football guys that were batting .430 to be – by the way, they're batting – I've often said they bat about 60%. They don't. Somebody did a study. It was on TV last night. .430. They bet 43%.
Yeah,
their first round guys.
Yeah, I mentioned that yesterday to Daniel Kelly.
I think there's some laziness going on there, or people have gotten jobs in that business, in a lot of scouting businesses. They don't know what the hell they're looking at. I mean, for the life of me, I love Jaden Daniels as a college player, but I can't project him to be good in the NFL. I just can't, because in the NFL, you're not going to be able to extend plays like you do. And look, you know the best thing on TV last night, besides Nick Saban — I miss Nick Saban because I had it on the NFL Network, or I had it on the Pat McAfee thing to begin with — was Bill Belichick. Mm-hmm. They asked Bill Belichick about these 6 quarterbacks. He's like, they all got a lot of work to do. Yeah. and then they're like, well, because, you know, everybody else is all hyped up, throwing the word generational out there. Stuff, generational. He's got a lot of work to do.
well, that's why you're
the GOAT, dude.
Who was it, you, JC, or was it Mike? not long ago. I think it was Mike who mentioned how often the term generational talent gets thrown around now.
Oh, that's me. It was
that weird. You? Was that you?
Okay. I noticed it in recruiting because it was because all of a sudden, like Deshaun Watson was a generational talent. And then I kind of picked up that Trevor Lawrence 2 years later was. And look, I think those two guys, you could probably make an argument. I think we need to redefine generational. One of the best of his time probably would be a better way to say it. But I started noticing every year of that Nico kid that's at Tennessee was called generational. Caleb Williams was called generational.
Yeah.
Waters you can't have but so many. And a generation is a long-ass time.
Right.
That's a long time. But you're talking Generation X is anybody that was born between 65 and 80.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long – yeah, I mean, there's millions of people. So if you're going to use the term generational, yeah, it's kind of like the Miss Universe pageant. I never thought the prettiest girl won Miss Universe pageant. I always thought it was Miss America or Miss Sweden or whatever. But anyway, but Universal should be the most beautiful woman in the world, but it's not. So I don't know. I don't know what they're talking about. But Caleb Williams is not generational. He's got a lot of upside. I have questions about him. Daniels to me is a player I liked better than all of them as a player in college. But I just started thinking about it last night. How's a skinny little guy gonna? I mean, is this not RG3 with less ability? Because RG3 had a rocket arm and a lot of good things physically. And then Drake May, well, he violates one of the rules for good quarterbacks. He doesn't have a good looking girlfriend. No, I mean that's part of it. If they don't, then you don't have any confidence. It's a scouting technique. She's not ugly, but not what you'd expect out of Drake freaking May, whose brothers are all professional athletes and who's got money coming. Drake May has got some questions too. Like Belichick got on the telestrator, was like, his footwork's just a mess. It's just a mess. And he started circling stuff. I mean, that was just kind of weird that it was like he was on the McAfee show with all that hollering and screaming, and then they go to Bill and he's like, oh, this is a mess. This is awful. This is terrible. I like Michael Penix talent-wise the best, but for the Falcons, you drafted one of the oldest quarterbacks in the draft, and you just paid Kirk Cousins $1 billion. And not only that, he has injury issues. So what are you doing? I mean, was Michael Penix that? I mean, maybe you end up looking like a genius, but history tells us the Falcons don't know what they're doing. Yeah. They could have hired Belichick and did not. They hired Raheem Morris. So I just want to remind everybody of that. And the most egregious one was Bo Nix. I don't know.
I'm not a draft expert. I'm not a quarterback coach, and I don't run any offenses in the NFL. But I do know this. Sean Payton knows what to do with a quarterback.
You would and think,
I wouldn't put anybody past Sean Payton. I mean, I was talking to Greg Atkins last year about Nate playing for Sean Payton. And Coach Atkins was telling me that if he trusts anybody as a head coach to develop players, especially at this position, quarterback, in the league, it is Sean Payton. So I'm not.
Well,
nobody cares what I think, and I don't blame you. But I think that when you look across the country, a lot of the heat that they're taking for that pick, I'm not so sure that I would buy that because of how much faith I personally have in Sean Payton.
Well, Drew Brees was probably not at the top of very many draft boards. I mean, you saw what he did with him. And if you kind of look at Bo's release and style, he's a little bit more of a scrambler. He's a little bit more like Steve Young, whereas you could probably compare Breeze to Montana a little bit as far as strengths and weaknesses. But, I mean, yeah, you got a good point there. We'll see what happens. But Bo Nix at 12, and I guess kind of what set me off about that is, number one, I've always thought Bo Nix was a tough guy that got a raw deal from fans at Auburn because of real unrealistic expectations because of A, his dad, Patrick Nix, one of the best in the program, and then B, First time a kid steps on the field, he leads them to an 18-point comeback against Oregon and wins. Mm-hmm. And so the bar got set way too high. And then I admired him for getting on out of there and going and check. But see, then time went on. And mm-hmm. and he gets does this interview where he goes, well, I'm just happier at Oregon because, you know, people just care too much about football at Auburn. Like, mm-hmm. you don't think they care in Denver? And you're a pro athlete now, and they're going to take shots at you? And they can because you're a pro and you're getting paid?
Yeah.
I mean, pro fans are a lot more blunt than college fans to players. So. To players. College fans tend to want to blame the coach for everything or somebody else. Pro fans will tell you if you suck as a player to your face. And it doesn't. I mean, you know, so there's my question there. And then I heard Mel Kiper say there is a distinct gap between Bo Nix and Spencer Rattler, my next two quarterbacks. There's a huge gap. All right, well, send Bo Nix to South Carolina.
And yeah, I don't believe
send
that
send Spencer to Oregon and with that group out there. And yeah. let's trade him. Let's trade him and see who does better. What do y'all think?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, too, and we got to go because we got Coach Lake waiting. Yeah. But I think this, because the Broncos didn't have a pick in round two, but their next one, I think they had the 12th pick in the third round. Had Bo Nix not been there, you wonder if they would have been the ones trying to get Rattler with the 12th pick in the third round, if not maybe even trying to get him up a little bit sooner. Because my understanding is Spencer Rattler was at least on the board with the Denver Broncos. So who knows? Who knows? But I felt like 12 would be early for Bo Nix. But to the point here, if they were going to take a quarterback and that was their pick and they didn't have another one until the third round and they were comfortable with it, then you got to take him, right? So they did.
I mean, look, everybody's feeling sad for Kirk Cousins. Don't feel sad for Kirk Cousins.
No, he's Kirk Cousins wiping his tears with money.
Kirk Cousins is the Gus Malzahn or Will Muschamp of the NFL quarterbacking. He's gotten paid, dog. Don't. Not done much to deserve it. To be honest with you, I mean, I've never sat there and daydreamed and been like, boy, if Kirk Cousins was just on a better team, he'd win a Super Bowl. Have you? Mm-hmm. Never. Yeah. But I still don't think it was right for the Falcons to do. I mean, the Bears have built their offense as well, just like the Falcons have, and they have talent too around this kid, and they're biting the bullet and going with a rookie. If you wanted Penix, then just draft him and don't spend all that money on Kirk freaking Cousins. I mean, what are you thinking?
Right.
Unless this, and I didn't think about this. This is interesting. You know, there was some talk about tampering with Cousins, like the Vikings complained, and it may have gotten resolved. But what if Kirk Cousins is like suspended first four games next year because they tampered?
Yeah.
And you don't want to get in an 0-4 hole. I know we got to get a break.
It's interesting. What do we not know? It's amazing. We don't know. Yeah. But somebody who knows everything is standing by.
Show about that.
Stuart Lake up next here on Inside the Gamecocks, the show.
Down here in the South, we don't always see eye to eye. While our taste in college football teams or what sauce, if any, goes best on a rack of ribs or what to mix with our Dixie vodka might be up for debate, we can all agree there's nothing better than a Southern tailgate. And like our favorite college teams, our ingredients come from small towns and big cities. They're grown in Southern soil, are crafted by Southern hands, and proudly represent the South in our backyard and beyond. So raise a glass of Dixie Southern Vodka to celebrate being made in America and raised in the South.
The season rolls on at Love Chevy, where the inventory is overflowing and the deals are in full bloom. Rev up your season with Love's exclusive specials on Suburbans, Tahoes, Silverados, Trailblazers, and the ever-popular Chevy Trax. They're hard to find. At Love Chevy, get behind the wheel and feel the possibilities. New adventures, new destinations, just you and the open road. Act now for Springtacular Savings at Love Chevrolet, the best selection of new Chevys, the lowest price, guaranteed. The other dealers upsell, overcharge, and will say most anything to get the sale. At Love Chevy, satisfied customers say it all. Things like helpful, knowledgeable, honest, and fun. Your trusted hometown Chevy dealer since 1961. I-26 at Harbison and at lovechevy.com. Together, let's drive.
That's the power of love. Love Chevy. Hey Gamecock fans, this is Roman Kimball with South Carolina Baseball. My friends over at Electric Bikes of Charleston have the largest selection of e-bikes in South Carolina. You can cruise up to high speeds of 28 miles per hour, which is about 70 miles an hour slower than my fastball. Stay in shape and enjoy your life with an electric bike from Electric Bikes of Charleston, where buyers come from all across South Carolina. Visit electricbikescharleston.com. See you at the ballpark, and go Gamecocks.
Hey Gamecock Nation, my name is Kyle, longtime listener of the show and avid golfer. I wanted to take my game to the next level, but let's face it, golf is a hard game to learn on your own. I heard the ad from McKellar Enterprises and reached out to the owner and former Gamecock golfer, Meredith Taylor. In just 2 months of working with Meredith, I shot my lowest round ever, and I've never felt more confident in my golf game. So if you're looking to take your game to the next level, go to McKellarEnterprises.org and book your lesson today with former Gamecock golfer Meredith Taylor. Go Gamecocks.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
What's up to the best fans in the country? This is Eli Jones, and you're tuned in to Inside the Gamecocks, the show. Go Cox.
All right, it is 11:25. Welcome back inside the Gamecocks, the show, always live from the Cinerama Studios. Gamecock Traditions has all the Gamecock baseball gear in store. If you're headed to Founders Park tonight, tomorrow, Sunday, all three, hopefully, you can go get your brand new hat. They've got the camo, they've got the black, they've got the garnet, they've got it all at Gamecock Traditions. And if it's got a Carolina logo on it, a percentage is going to the Garnet Trust to help support NIL efforts at the University of South Carolina. Our apparel partners here and yours, Gamecock Traditions in Lexington and the Village at Sand Hill. Have it delivered to your doorstep as well. Whatever you order online, they'll deliver it. GamecockTraditions.com. You got plenty of Gamecock gear, Coach, but I'm sure you've shopped out there from time to time. What's up?
Oh, yeah, always looking to update and keep new stuff, so great place to go for sure. No, just enjoying y'all talking a little NFL football. No, Browns had no pick last night, so I kind of just got to watch it and see what happened. But it was nice seeing my old neighbor, Bo Nix, go in the 12th pick, though, because he was in our neighborhood in Goose Creek when his dad, Patrick, was at CSU as a football coach. So
I didn't know that. Oh. Wow. So yeah. does he owe you any money or anything from this contract? Or
well, I'm certainly going to try, but he ended up.
Love that. Just the deadpan there.
Davis. He ended up marrying into that family. So, yeah, still a lot of Goose Creek ties, even though that's an Alabama family, but not a big Broncos fan as a Browns fan, but I'll certainly be pulling for Bo to do it as well as he can.
You know, it's funny you mention this too, because it seems like when he got in the portal, or when there were rumors that he may transfer earlier, there was talk about South. There was a buzz about South Carolina. It didn't make any sense to me. I had no idea he used to live in the state.
Yeah,
so there may have been some truth to that. You know, looking back,
could have been a great dude. And as you said, JC, a lot of pressure going back to where your dad had been, a undefeated season, a legendary kind of guy. And but I can't imagine. I would say there's probably a handful of NFL teams that are similar to college fan bases, and Denver is one of them. So he certainly.
There's no breaks out there. And I guess I was a little more so down on Kuiper's comment that there was this gigantic chasm between Knicks and Rattler. There's not. I mean, that's him protecting his own rankings, I think. And I guess that's what set me off, but it was a red flag where he talked about that, though. I mean, about.
Oh, it is. So, yeah. It's certainly a bad move. And I was shocked when he did it, because of knowing his dad and knowing their football background, I'm sure his dad went, hey, keep some of those opinions to yourself. We don't have to share everything. And that's probably not a bad rule of life to go by with everything we do.
You're probably right about that, Coach. You're probably right about that. Let's see how right you are about tonight and throughout the weekend. Carolina's got the fourth-ranked Wildcats in town. This is a big series. Both of these programs today projected by the large majority of the outlets out there to be regional hosts if the season were to end. But this will go a long way in cementing that for South Carolina. Kentucky, if they drop the series, is still going to host a regional at this point in time. But this is a big one for the Gamecocks. Fell last week to Arkansas, 2 out of 3 at Founders Park. And I kind of felt like coming into this six-game stretch here, it would be pretty important to run out there with a 500 record, 3-3, if not better. If they want to do better, they're going to have to sweep, obviously. But give us a scouting report on Kentucky as they enter tonight's contest.
You know, I started kind of, since we had no midweek, I'm going to really focus on us. Then I glanced at Kentucky's, and this was my first day. I realized they have the top batting average, top on base percentage, top in runs allowed, third in home runs, second in ERA, and top opponent batting average. And I went, okay, I probably need to look at them a little more, because I love to pick on Derek Scott. He's not a big Kentucky fan, so all year he keeps telling me in the booth, these guys aren't that good. They're not that good. And now it's become my personal just vendetta to keep throwing numbers at Derek to go, dude, look at this average. Look at that average. But listen to some of these, because I'm going to build them up, because that's the only way you can knock them off, right? Mm-hmm. They have struck out in conference 125 times. Compare that to us. We've struck out 201 times. So this isn't a team that's going to strike out a ton. But these are the numbers that started jumping out. They're 359 in conference play with runners in scoring position. That's really a big number. 58 two-out RBIs in conference play. They're hitting 297 with two outs. So they're an offense that one of my buddies asked me this morning, what are they? I said, they're a team that creates their own momentum. And what I mean by that is they won't strike out a bunch. They're going to make you make plays. And if you don't make the plays, then they just start doing stuff. They run. They got 102 stolen base attempts. They're 81 successful. They're going to run more than any team we've seen so far. I thought Texas A&M ran from first to third, the best of any team we played, which really set them up well offensively. This team's going to really run. So those numbers just jump out at you to me. Then you drop down again, the batting average. Their opponent's only hitting 212 in conference play. And so they're going to make it – you're going to have to play a full game, which we are capable of doing, but you're going to have to play that game to beat this team, I think.
Yeah, teams that can beat you a variety of ways always make me a little bit nervous. One of the other things that stuck out to me in league play, because I know, knowing you like I do, you're big on the league play numbers, especially at this point in time in the season. And if memory serves me correct, the Wildcats, when you combined their sacrifice flies and their sacrifice bunts, there's 20 of them. That's also the most in the league. I think the next closest is Mississippi State, who's got 8 sack flies and 10 sack bunts. So, you know, they're not afraid to give themselves up to move somebody over or to get somebody in, but then they can also drive the baseball. And as you pointed out, they'll put pressure when they're on the base pass. This 32 stolen bases are more than the next closest opponent has even attempted in the league. I think A&M maybe has attempted 30. Wildcats have attempted 47 and swiped 32 of them. So with all that being said, I mean, we'll get to the pitching in a minute, but this is a big weekend for Cole Messina as well. And managing that, if you can, I mean, it's not always all on the catcher, clearly. But it's a big weekend for Cole Messina and quite frankly, for the defense, and being able to throw in front of runners and do the little things right to prevent some of that stuff.
Well, no question. And Lee Ellis, obviously, will be the shortstop. As we got the news yesterday on Will Tippett, I was kind of hoping Will would be back, but obviously always take the priority of making sure of the health, especially with concussion. But Austin Brindley, who last week kind of got through in the mix on us, he's going to have to really be ready to throw, because last week looked like throwing may be a little bit of an issue on some of the balls that I thought we were going to throw and just kind of threw to a cut. So I promise you this Kentucky team noticed that just as quick as I noticed that, especially a team that can run. But you're right. It's going to have to be – just don't let them get the engine going. That's what I mean by they build momentum off themselves. The sacrifice bunts, field it, throw it to first, get an out. Don't mishandle it. All of a sudden it's first and second. They'll bunt again, second and third. Those are going to be the things that – I'm really just ready to put my eyes on this Kentucky team, because a lot like Derek, I just kept giving it, look who they played. Look who they played. But now we're 18 games in. I don't think it's ever fair to anybody in the conference to say, well, they played a weaker conference schedule. It just, come on. I'm never going to do that. And this is 18 games now that I really look at. And I don't know if I've ever seen, or I know, at least not lately, a team whose SEC numbers are better than their regular season numbers. They're hitting .320 in SEC play, .297 overall. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just keeps going down. That, you know, as you keep looking how many runs they've scored, how many things they do in league play, man, if I were Gamecock today, I'd be fired up, because this is a tremendous challenge to you, to what you get to do. And as you say, we're going to talk pitching. As I was sitting here this morning, I kind of guess Dylan Eskew is going to be our third starter. I know there's a little mystery still behind that, but let's just think it'll probably be him. If so, our combined three starters are 7-5. Theirs are 17-3. So that tells you their starters have stayed out there to be a big part of the decision in the game, where our bullpen has been more the determining factor in the game.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, with so they're going with the same rotation, and I thought Roman threw very well last week till he had that kind of strange. We were talking to Kip yesterday, and I said, "Did you ever find out what was going on there?" Obviously, he's right back on the hill tonight. It's not a major injury. It wasn't a blister. Did you hear what it was? What was it?
Hey, I want to know what the heck went on, because I thought it may have been a blister. Because I don't know if you noticed last Friday, every guy that came in was having trouble gripping the ball.
Yep.
And on the radio, it used to be the umpires rubbed up the balls. Well, now the umpires are prima donna in college, so they don't even rub balls up. The managers are rubbing the balls up. So, to me, the umpires should be rubbing the balls up before the game. You do it in minor leagues, you do it in major leagues. Can't quite understand why college they don't. But they just kept throwing the balls out, throwing the balls out. So, I had thought it might be a blister as well. But when I asked Matt Williams, he described it like the best way he could describe it is like a writer's cramp, because he was gripping the ball so tight with his thumb because he felt like he could never get a grip of the ball. So it almost become a numbness in his pitching thumb. Like almost, that's how Matt kept saying, like writer's cramp, writer's cramp. Well, I never really got writer's cramp that much. I didn't write that much. So I said, okay. I said, so his thumb went. He goes, yeah, his thumb went numb. And there was no issue nerve. Doctors cleared everything. So hopefully tonight, and it's kind of cool here this morning, so I don't know what it'll be like tonight, but I don't think it'll be as hot and as humid as last week. That was really the issue. It was just a numbness in his thumb from gripping the ball so tight.
That's the first time I've ever heard that, but I'm glad he's okay.
Oh, yeah, me too.
So whether you like it or not, you're going to pitch to contact with Kentucky. Their strikeout numbers are low. And Eli Jones is a guy who does pitch to contact. You certainly will be able to barrel some up off of him from time to time, but he'll create a lot of ground balls. And I kind of, you know, going back to last weekend when they shifted things around, I certainly understood why they did it. I get it. Understand. Kip mentioned yesterday, hey, man, if you're a Friday night guy, you're a Friday night guy. Like, you want to be in that role. So I certainly understand why there's an argument to still have him in that role as well. But here's Roman, who's going to get it tonight. And so how do you pitch a team like, I mean, obviously you want as many swing and misses as you can get. I understand that. These guys hit the ball out of the yard. They hit the ball in the gap. They get runners on. They move them around. If they're not on base, they can't do that. I get it. But when you've got some guys who will pitch to contact, you know, how do you attack a program like the Wildcats?
Well, I think it'll a lot of things to determine. Like last weekend, the ball didn't travel at all. I think there's one home run hit all weekend last weekend. So you kind of start to figure out with that, maybe you can pitch a little more up in the zone than you can on a day where it's just shooting out. Another big part, the umpire. Tonight, will the umpire be giving you a little bit, or will he be making it a lot smaller for you? I think that'll be kind of figured out early on. I was a big, and I know who's umpiring the plate every game I ever did, because I wanted my catcher to know. I wanted my catcher to know and my pitcher to know that, hey, this guy's got a small zone and a really bad attitude. So you got to figure out how you're going to attack that. We're going to attack it in different ways. There's some umpires you can encourage to call more strikes. There's some guys that when you encourage them to call more strikes, they go the other way, and they're going to show you. So you would really tonight, it's going to be important for Cole Messina to create that quick relationship with the home plate umpire of, hey, man, this team, they don't strike out a lot, so we're going to be attacking the zone and hope that gives you maybe a little bit more in or out, whatever they decide is best. But I think the key tonight is just going to be playing really good defense behind Roman Kimball, because I do feel like this team, looking at their numbers, aren't going to strike out more than four or five times in this game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting how Matt Williams handles the staff, because they do from time to time kind of have an all-hands-on-deck formula, but you don't want to show all your hands either if you've got to go try to win tomorrow. So, you know, that it's an interesting balancing act. At the end of the day, if they can put a bunch of numbers up on the board, maybe a couple of crooked ones, that's going to make things a little bit easier for this staff and not having to be so perfect. So you mentioned the Wildcats offense. The Wildcats pitching staff is pretty good. I think, would you say 17 wins or something like that?
17-3.
Yeah, it's not bad for their weekend starting rotation when you combine all that together. Their ERA is the second lowest in SEC play behind Arkansas. So back-to-back, you got 1-2 walking into Founders Park. Ethan Petrie had a tough weekend last weekend. That's very unlike him. He's an All-American for a reason. And I would expect that we're going to see what we know of Ethan Petrie this weekend, Coach. But they've got to – they had a great weekend in Gainesville. Their approach with two strikes was phenomenal. You know, they weren't trying to do too much, and it seemed to really work out. And then you came home, and you get the best staff in the country, and that can throw things off in a hurry. And I know that, and we all know that. We've seen it. We've been there. But it is still important for them to be able to put the ball in play and try to do the little things that they can offensively to manufacture runs when the ball isn't leaving the yard. So seeing what we've seen the last couple of weekends, what would you say about this offense coming into this one?
I agree with a lot of what you said. The key to this weekend, though, is you're going to have to put the ball in play early. I've said it already a couple of times when people have asked me. We find ourselves a lot of times with that runner at third and the infield's back, and we pop up or we strike out. Those runs are just as crucial as that run in the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning. Just hit a ground ball to second. You know, hit a ground ball to short where they just have to throw across first. It's a boring run. You know, nobody's going to jump up and start sandstorm when you hit a ground ball in the second inning that scores a run but those runs all count the same. Mm. So when you get to the eighth inning and you have seven runs instead of five runs, it's a big, big difference in what you can do with your bullpen, how that team feels. I thought Arkansas last week, Coach Tanner and I always kind of do our see who's smarter before the series and then do it. I said to him, if we score four runs, we got a chance to win every game in this series. And he gave me the come on. I said, I'm serious. I think if we score four runs, we've got a chance to beat Arkansas every game in this series. Because I felt the way our pitchers have done all season, they weren't going to let them score eight. And I would have been pretty smart. We'd have won two out of three if we get four runs. Because we lose 2-1 and we win the other one. They had three. We won 6-3. So, I mean, but Kentucky's different. I don't think four runs are going to help you win. I think you're going to have seven, eight, maybe even nine runs to beat this offense because I think Tennessee's really good offensively, but I think this Kentucky team is just as relentless on when you think you're going to escape an inning, they put the back-to-back two doubles and they score a run. Or they do something and you go, how the heck did that happen? So I do think we're going to have to score 7 to 8 runs a game to win a game in this series.
Coach, how good of a job is Nick Mangione doing up there, and how tough of a job is that? I think they're the only SEC program to not go to Omaha ever. It's kind of a northern outpost. And I know Stoops is winning in football because he goes to Ohio and sells the SEC. What's Nick doing up there to get that? Because they've been good. They've been pretty good here for a while.
Well, I think what Nick has done so well is he's been around that program so long. He was there with John Cohen when they were good back in the mid-2000s, and then he went with him to Mississippi State. He went back. He really has – and, you know, Dan McDonald, our good friends, and Dan's at Louisville, obviously that's their kind of rival. But he will tell you, Nick Mangione does a great job with high school coaches and junior college coaches, and he does a great job of getting young kids to their camps and different things to – become Kentucky fans. And now I got to tip my hat to him. He was on the hottest seat maybe in the league last year. I mean, it was kind of boiling that, hey, bad year, he's gone. And they turn around and have a good year, a really good year. And you kind of thought, well, maybe that was just luck. Then he went out and they got a bunch of good portal guys this year. And they're having a really good year. Right now they're national 8 seed if things ended. So I really think what Nick does so well is he embraces that Kentucky baseball fan. He doesn't try to overdo it. He knows his spot and his maybe role in it. And then he's, I don't know if sometimes I'm as glass half full as he is, but he is a super positive guy. So I think that translates into his teams as well.
Yeah, he's done an outstanding job. There's no doubt. And having a new ballpark helps because the old Erector set that they played in, I don't know how you got players to that thing. They also, by the way, you're gonna see a familiar name who just pitched in this ballpark last June, Dominic Nimmin, the lefty from Central Connecticut State. Gamecocks tried to lure him here. He chose Kentucky, and he did not pitch against South Carolina in the regional last year. So this will be right, Coach. He didn't pitch against Gamecocks. Right. Last year.
They had used him in their tournament, and they saved. Remember, he no hit Campbell for six when he. Two, and then they got to him in the seventh and got him out. But yeah, he's obviously left-handed starter. So the other two guys, oddly enough, are right-handed because it seems like every weekend except Florida, think how well you just said you did against Florida. They're right-handed starters. Think how well you did against Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. Right-handed starters. So I was kind of surprised, but Kentucky's doing so well they didn't want to take Mason Moore off of Sunday. Because he's 7-0, but it's been left-handed pitchers have kind of been the main thing to get after our offense.
So it's going to be interesting. I'd be really interested to see what those meetings have been like this week with Joey, because Joey was with Campbell last year, Joey Holcomb, and faced these guys. So he's got the scouting report on this guy, and obviously there's plenty of tape from the season, but he saw him in this ballpark, Founders Park, last June. I would venture a guess that he's probably offered some pretty good information to these guys that are going to step up there and face him on Saturday.
I would think so, too. And another thing is Kentucky plays on turf. If I remember right, their new field is all turf, which is a big difference when you come back to natural grass and dirt. And I don't think there's a better infield in the country than at Founders, but it ain't turf. It don't give you a truest hop as turf does. So, again, I think this could be an advantage to us. Now, Kentucky's coming in here fielding 983. Yeah. They're top of the league in defense, so we'll see. But that's just something I always remember when those turf teams come on the road.
Yeah. Turf. I was giving Holbrook hell about that not long ago. I was like, y'all got turf, man. You sold out.
You know, in July. That'll be fun in Charleston. That looks pretty. And there's no upkeep, but you don't want to be walking across that thing at noon too many times, probably in August.
No. If I say, hey, man, you sold out. You sold out on us. Wildcats, by the way, are 8-1 on the road in the SEC. The lone loss was up there in front of Missouri and their 13 fans, which is where the Gamecocks will head next week after they get through this series. So, baseball question for you here, because we clearly watched Dalton Reeves kind of step into the scene, and the question instantly for those who hadn't seen the kid hit this year, which was all of us, where they been hiding this cat? You know, he shows up and he's hitting a couple balls out of the yard. Obviously had a big game against PC, but had a nice weekend down in Gainesville. Brindling, of course, last weekend, as you pointed out, he's all of a sudden in the lineup and had a nice weekend. I thought he had a productive weekend. I would use the word productive, doing some additional stuff with the bat other than just slapping it in the sixth hole and stuff like that. He was moving runners around and causing a little chaos out there, which is neat to see. But with that said, you know, Dalton Reeves cooled off a little bit last weekend, and that's baseball. But the scouting, and you don't get better scouting than this league. If anybody happened to look in the dugout last weekend, Coach Van Horn is probably one of the best out there that evaluates guys. And on the back wall, if you saw it on TV, I saw it when I was at Founders. It's pretty neat how they have everything up in the hot and cold zones for every single hitter. And when you've got a staff that can throw to a spot, they understand how to pitch, maybe you got guys who've been around a while, and you've got that information, it makes things a lot easier. So now there's some scouting out there now on Austin Brindling. There's some scouting out there now on Dalton Reeves. Coach King did say something a few weeks ago that it's a great baseball comment, and it was about Ethan Petrie. He shot onto the scene last year. Now everybody has made their adjustments, and he needed to adjust back, and it starts to get a little bit difficult when that happens. So now these guys are probably going to have to start making some adjustments because other dudes know how to pitch them. So you're a lot smarter than I am. You're smarter than all of us collectively when it comes to the game of baseball. How would you describe that?
Well, I think you really did describe it, that when you're like Austin Brindling, I kept saying on the radio last week, he was difficult to pitch to because they didn't know who he was. So as a pitcher, you're out there on the mound with zero evidence of who you are. So they were trying to figure it out. You know, his size makes him harder to pitch to. He may be 5'7", 5'8". That's a difficult thing when you think that the average dude striding to the plate in the SEC is probably 6'1", 6'2". And all of a sudden, to a pitcher, that strike zone just immediately looks different. I think that's why he got a lot of fastballs last week, because he was behind or ahead in the count so much. I did feel with Dalton Reeves that Arkansas group had kind of figured out how he was going to have to beat them, and they weren't going to let him just get a fastball in the middle, fastball down, fastball wherever. So I know Dalton has had a study how they pitched him a lot more. And Lee Ellis, the great thing about Lee Ellis and Austin too, but Lee Ellis is so energetic, and he can still bunt. He can hit a chopper on the ground. Those two guys can beat balls out and really frustrate you as a pitcher. When you make a good pitch and he three hops a ball to short, he's got a chance to be safe at first. So I think Lee Ellis, same way. They're all going to be pitched to differently this week. That doesn't mean they're going to get you out. That doesn't mean they're going to execute it. But certainly, as you said, the hot and cold zone, where did he put the ball? How do we position? And now those pitchers have a vision of what they look like coming to the plate, because they had 12 at-bats last weekend to look at on video this week. So I certainly think it'll be different type approach from them, from the pitchers.
With all that said, Ellis, Brindling, Reeves, I mean, I'm a big believer, of course, and hey, man, it's go time. You know, it's your turn. step up there and play well. That Coach Tanner was a master at that, being able to put guys in and it was their turn and they would produce. And so with that said, I'm a big believer in you take your own responsibility, you do your job, and don't worry about anybody else. But none of those guys are SEC veterans. They're quite young to this league. Yep. So how much pressure does that put on Cole Messina? How much pressure does that put on Ethan Petrie? And I give you a name who I don't think we have been saying his name enough, just because I feel like he's probably due for – he's a streaky guy. He can be, but he's due for some big moments. Kennedy Jones. I mean, dude – Coach Lake, I mean, you talked to Smoke. I mean, I was talking to Smoke a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about Kennedy Jones. He said, that guy right there, he's the best hitter on the team. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah. He's like, he's got a couple of things to fix, but if he gets them fixed, holy smokes. I sat there and watched him take BP, and I can tell you right now, the kid can play at the next level, and that's coming from best hitter I've ever been around. So he's due, right? Isn't he due to get hot and kind of start banging some balls off the wall and over it?
Yeah, I said last week, and this will be something I know to address, he was thinking way too much in the box. You could see him just mentally when body would look like he was thinking breaking ball, they'd throw fastball. And when he would get himself ready for the fastball, they'd throw breaking ball. And that's what I told Derek. He's a page behind last weekend, and that was a really good staff because they could execute it. But I think the biggest thing for Kennedy to do is Chipper Jones, years ago, they asked him how he hit certain guys. It was at a conference, and he said, I guessed. He said, you weren't going to hit Kurt Schilling with two strikes. You weren't going to hit Randy Johnson with two strikes. So you guessed early in your counts. He said, and when I said guess, I studied them, but it was an educated guess, and I swung. And I was ready to hit within the first two pitches of my bats against certain elite guys. And I think that's kind of what I'd have told Kennedy this week is, hey, dude, I don't care if you look bad in the first couple pitches, but get your swing off. And you're probably going to be a lot smarter than you think when you run into these balls. Because I agree with you. I think the dude, I mean, he was smoking hot. And now it's just has gone cold. I'm looking at our conference. He's dropped to 262. And that's really happened in just the last maybe six games. Because starting out, he's hit some of the hardest balls of the year. I mean, he's hit balls that didn't leave the ballpark. He had a double at Clemson that, like, it skipped when it hit the fence. And I've seen him hit them through the infield this year. So Kennedy would definitely be a guy I would have been encouraging all week to be who you are again. Be that guy that walked up to the plate and you did action within the first two or three pitches early on. Get back to doing that.
Agree with that 100%. That's another thing I was talking to Justin about, especially in those first ABs, you know, let's not get in two strike counts here. You know, let's go up there and attack and be intelligent about what we're doing. These guys are primed to play well, and the Wildcats coming in this weekend, it's an enormous opportunity for them to continue to put their stamp on being a national seed, as they're projected to be right now. If they lose the series, they'll probably slide out and probably have to fight their way back in. So this is a big one. I'll ask you this, just kind of a general synopsis of where we are now in the SEC. Do you think right now six is the number, and maybe seven if things go the league's way? And what's I feel like 16 and 14 in the league, if you've done what you're supposed to do in the non-con, which all these teams have, if you're at 16 and 14, You're probably hosting, right?
I think if you're 16, 14, you're definitely hosting because you're RPI in the top 15, maybe. I feel you got to go 6-6 through these 12. So, I mean, it's not asking you to go 10-2. Mm-hmm. And 6-6 is going to be a challenge, not because you're not good, but because of who you're playing. This is a really good Kentucky team. I watched Missouri last night against Tennessee. Those guys didn't give in to Tennessee. And they got beat handily by Tennessee, but they never quit. So they're going to be really tough to play at home next week. I have no doubt about that. Then you get Georgia, who might be the oddest team in the SEC. It feels like nobody ever talks about them, but they're right in the middle of everything. They got the leading home run hitter in the country. So they're really good. They're in the top 10 RPI. Then you're going to go finish your year at Tennessee, who most likely is going to be fighting to win the SEC. So these 12 games, if you can go 6-6, I feel you're very comfortably in a regional chance to host. You go 7-5, like you said, in the conference, I have no doubt you're hosting, because they love these type facilities like we have at Founders to host. It's so centrally located. They know the fans are going to show up. Teams like coming here. So you got every reason to do it. So everything's right there for you. But on the flip side, you go 5-7, you're going to be clawing at the end to hopefully get a break and sneak in as a 2 seed or some different things. So certainly each game is going to be important here in these, not only last 12 conference, but you got to take care of business Wednesday night here at home. And then when you go to Winthrop here in about 2 weeks, you got to take care of those as well.
Yeah, if you're a baseball fan, you're monitoring everything in the SEC right now. All of a sudden, Mississippi State has entered the hosting chat as well. They're 10-8 in league play, 27-14 overall. So if you, I guess if you ask me today, I would say that there are 8 teams in contention to host out of the SEC, and I don't think they're going to get 8. I just don't think the committee is going to do that. So 7, certainly 6, but maybe 7. If you're the Gamecocks, be in the top 6.
Yeah, that's it. I try to think around. The ACC's having too good a season, too. I mean, you're thinking Florida State, North Carolina, they're hosting. So you start eliminating the number of hosts. Obviously, there's some they're going to do. So I'm with you. I think 6 is a definite. 7 is what you hope to get. So just get yourself in that top 6 as this thing wraps up, because then you got the SEC tournament. Heck, it's hard to win there. So, I mean, you're going to have to go in there in a single elimination game most likely, because I don't know if we're going to creep in the top 4. So that's going to be another challenge. So let's take care of Kentucky this weekend, though. This is an opportunity to get to play them at home, and this is a big, big opportunity for the Gamecocks.
There's no question about that. South Carolina has the 3rd most quad one wins in college baseball, 10 of them walking into the weekend. Get you 2 more, and you'll have definitely the 2nd most. Yeah, you'll have the 2nd most behind – I'm not going to say their name, but there's another team. Coach, always looking forward to the call. 6:45 airtime tonight on the Gamecock Sports Network. You can pull it up on the Gamecock Sports app if you are not in a local market. Of course, it will be on TV, but as we always advise you, it's always neat to listen to Coach Lake and Derek, especially their Dominion Energy trivia. This gets better by the week. Every week I find a new reason of why my power bill is higher than it should be, thanks to you and Derek Scott.
I know. I'm in my crawl space more than I've ever been in my life now, thanks to Derek. Got paranoid. I'm checking filters. And, hey, last thing before I go. Beamer ball tomorrow night. So when we get done winning the series against Kentucky, really, really cool event. Everybody here in the Gamecock Club really worked their tails off. If you haven't been, it's something in the future to look at doing. But it's tomorrow night in Williams-Brice. I think it's a really, really cool event. So kind of check it out. And they got some awesome silent auction things online. You can get a Taylor Swift used guitar from her concert. So, I mean, there's some awesome stuff to check out, too.
How did Emily Beamer pull that off?
I don't know. Mm. But it's there. So some cool stuff. But look forward to seeing y'all next week and hopefully see some of y'all out there this week.
Thanks to that comment by Stuart Lake. Security will be added at Williams-Brice Stadium so nobody breaks into you.
Steal a Taylor guitar. Swift guitar. Yep.
Hey, man. Once gift. Again.
Yeah. Jason got advanced knowledge of that, apparently, is why he's already on his way down here. That's right.
It was so great to see you last weekend. Very thankful for you as a friend, and thanks to Gamecock Baseball for taking care of my little girls. They had the time of their lives. I don't know if it was the playground or if it was the baseball, but they want to go back. Good. So we've even thrown it around, jumping in the truck tomorrow and coming up there. I don't know. We'll see.
Awesome.
But they're pretty ecstatic. Go get them tonight, Coach. Thank you, man.
Thank you, guys. I enjoy it.
Thanks, Stu.
Stuart Lake. 12 o'clock. His partner is up next, Derek Scott, here on ITG.
Charleston Fitness Equipment is keeping South Carolina in shape. Clients have come from all over the Palmetto State to find that one piece of equipment that they enjoy that keeps them looking and feeling good. Whether it's a home rower, treadmill, elliptical, free weights, a home gym, or something else, Charleston Fitness Equipment keeps the mirror smiling back at you. Get in shape like the Gamecocks do. Visit CharlestonFitnessEquipment.com. Gamecock owned and operated and proud partners of Inside the Gamecocks, the show.
The preferred sign partner of Gamecock Athletics is Signorama Columbia, and they should be yours too. A full-service sign company that handles design, production, install, and service, Signorama Columbia has helped to bring to life the perfect vision for so many all across South Carolina. Owned and operated by proud Gamecock alumni, they can handle all types of signage, including interior and exterior, vehicle graphics, and more. Go to Signorama.com and find the West Columbia location or call them at 803-407-9284. Bring your brand to life with Signorama Rama Columbia and go Gamecocks.
Cool Joe here, and when I'm not eating average jambalaya or celebrating endless summer in Destin, I like to eat pimento cheese straight out the bucket. Mmm, and the only pimento cheese I like to eat is from Nana's Porch. It's award-winning, it'll melt in your mouth, it's good on a cracker, it's good in a bowl, it's good on a piece of bread. Also, don't forget, Nana's Porch has a hell of a food truck. It's award-winning as well. And they're here for all of your catering needs. So get online, nanasports.com. It's good. Coach O signing off. Endless summer, go Tiger.
For chicken cock, we get a medium to medium plus toast. The char level, we use a number 3 level char. If you char too deep, you start burning away some of those flavor components that you just created. If you just char a barrel and you don't toast it, you're going to create some of those flavors just on a thin layer, just inside the char, but not the actual depth and full extent of flavors that you're going to get if you toast it properly. All those elements, that's exactly what they do. They boil down to great flavor.
If you're in the real estate market in the Lowcountry or even in the Midlands, please contact me, JB, with Coast to Coast Realty SC. Go Gamecocks.
This break is presented by Billy G's Carolina Barbecue, the state newspaper's 2023 winner for Best Catering, Best Barbecue, and Best Food Truck. Visit BillyG'sCarolinaBarbecue.com for all of your catering needs.
Ladies and gentlemen, here it is.